The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Quick Slants Podcast is brought to you by Nissan. Go to ChooseNissan.com today for great savings on some spectacular Nissan models. That's ChooseNissan.com.
Today on Quick Slants Podcast, Robert Kraft. Has he been made an offer he can't refuse? I don't think so. Patriots free agents in focus. Maybe it's time to test the trade market for the wide receivers. Meanwhile, Phil Perry is in the high, and we're going to talk about some draft prospects at the wideout position. All that and more on Quick Slants Podcast.
Philly!
Hey!
Franz. Hey, what's up, Skull Crusher? We got John Henry on the ones and twos, I guess they say. Say it again?
No, it's still not working. Yeah. Thank God. It was about time we shut your mic off because it has just gotten out of control lately with you chiming in.
I'm back.
Oh, hey.
There he is.
What's up, fella?
There he is.
So John Henry is our podcast.
I was just kidding, by the way.
Quarterback.
He very rarely chimes in.
Doesn't chime in. And as you can see, when I did ask him to chime in, he was ill-prepared. Robert Kraft, today, news breaks that he was slid an offer by prosecutors in Florida saying, how about this, Bob? We're going to drop the charges if you say that in the hypothetical court case, you would have been found guilty. So there would have been no legal malfeasance. Nobody would have screwed up. Your legal team wouldn't have gotten you off. You would have been found guilty. So we'll drop those charges. How does that sound, Robert? And my guess, Phil, is that Robert is going to say what?
Yeah, my guess would be that he's going to say, yeah, thanks, but no thanks. Because if you come out with a statement, the kind of statement that he came out with as soon as the charges came through, which was that he did nothing illegal, to then later, about a month later now, admit guilt at the end of the whole thing, how do you benefit from that, even if the charges are wiped? Because in the court of public opinion, you are guilty forever if you agree to a deal like that.
To me, the court of public opinion is almost moot not to push back. Because the court of public opinion is, okay, you went in there, money changed hands, something came to climax in there, apparently, and as a result, they pinched you. Now, you can say, and this seems to be what his plausible deniability is, look, I've had a long-standing relationship with them. We had an act of intimacy, and I went back 12 hours later and had another act of intimacy, and you have it on videotape, and you have an exchange of money, but you don't know that that was prostitution. Maybe it was just me paying them back for a loan that they gave me. So he's got that in his back pocket if he wants to try and bring it out all the way to being found guilty or not guilty. But, Phil, I think most of us conclude that if it walks like a duck, talks like a duck, quacks like a duck, it's probably a duck.
Sure. Right. Yeah, I just think that if you're him, this is why you hire the three lawyers that you hired. A, because you want to be able to argue something that seems relatively implausible at this point to most of us. And B, you want to ensure that you're being treated by the prosecutors at the state of Florida in a way that any quote-unquote John would be treated in a situation like this. That's what you're looking for.
And
the catch
is,
is
he?
You're Robert Kraft, and you're worth billions of dollars, and you're a huge name, and you're caught up in a case that could have larger implications, even though the human trafficking side of this whole thing has gotten quiet lately.
And even if it doesn't have huge implications, it at least shows, hey, look what we caught in our huge net here.
Sure.
We were fishing, we didn't catch it, but it wasn't fruitless in terms of raising awareness of human trafficking, even if it wasn't going on at the Orchid and Robert Kraft wasn't involved. And I do believe that's true.
Right.
It certainly has risen in my consciousness, and I think it will in that of a lot of men and women across the country. But
definitely,
the point that you're making is good, is he is not really being treated as equal And that's the ironic thing, because I hear a lot of people saying privilege, and he's got the lawyers, and he's going to buy himself off. He's not being treated as if he's an insurance adjuster, a 33-year-old insurance adjuster from, you know, Pensacola. Being treated differently.
Well, it feels that way. It feels that way given the latest news with the Wall Street Journal report that this unusual offer has been made. And that was the word they used, was quote-unquote unusual. So did they make the unusual offer because they're trying to be nice to the guy? Because they're trying to give him an out early? I don't think so.
Well,
I think
they're trying to look silly if they don't have a case.
I think that you might be getting closer to the truth now. I think, to me, and I'm not a legal expert, but I would say that it is potentially a sign of waning confidence on the part of the prosecution to be offering that kind of deal in the first place.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, when you are, you're finding yourself in a case that is now so high profile, and maybe it is the highest profile case that anybody that is in this office has worked on to this point. You're talking about a really big name here. If you're feeling like, ooh, we may not actually have everything we need to make this go, okay, well, what can we do? We can offer him a deal. I think that now might be where you are now.
Yeah, and Phil and I, this has been going on for about a month, and believe me, Phil and I have both been working the phones, and we're pretty well apprised of what's going on, not just what we're seeing, but, you know, what some of the mindset is behind the scenes. And, you know, I've been told that in about 95% of these instances, you see this dismissed, and there's no caveat of, you got to say that if it went to court, you'd be found guilty. So
you're talking usually a class that you have to take, a fine, which, typically, right?
And my understanding is that may have already been satisfied. So it's not like he's going to have to go to West Palm Beach Middle School at 7 o'clock on a Tuesday night and sit there and watch a film strip. I don't think they have film strips anymore. In a class with 12 other guys. The embarrassment is the penalty. And in his case, I think it's extreme. But
I think the other thing here, too, that's interesting is just the amount of time that's elapsed. Because from what I understand, and maybe it's because there are so many Johns, right? There's been supposedly 200 people that have been charged in this thing, that maybe that's one of the reasons why it's taking so long. But I think there was a feeling that this might be dismissed. They might go through this diversion program, they call it in Florida, where we're talking about the class and the fine, and you get the thing wiped. That could have been done, from what I gather, in the span of a week or 2 weeks. And now we are way past that.
And now that we're way past that, that's what's interesting to me as we sit here and talk about it. And there's people out there, and to a degree, I'm in this camp that says, you know what? You got to shut down the circus, Robert. You got to, do you want to have this go on March 28th? There's going to be, your attorney has to show up. We're going to have the owners' meetings next week. If it's not adjudicated between now and Tuesday, your story is going to dominate a tentpole event for the league, in which every other owner is going to be asked about it. Roger Goodell is going to be asked about it. It's going to be the talk of the event. And people, every time they see you walk through the lobby, are going to be going, Robert, just a moment. And it's not just going to be your football reporters there. Because by now, unfortunately, the lid is about to be blown off the wonderful little event known as the owners' meetings for people like me. Because the access to coaches, GMs, and owners is unparalleled.
Tremendous.
So you're probably going to have your TMZs and your Wall Street Journals and news reporters, et cetera, there.
But why would
he not just say, I got to shut this circus down, release my statement of contrition, and take the shitty deal that's being offered to him?
I would say my thinking when it comes to that is he's maybe got an eye towards the league itself.
Same opinion.
And what is the league going to do in terms of its punishment for me? We know that executives, owners are held to a higher standard according to the personal conduct policy than the players are. And if he admits some guilt in this, maybe the punishment on the league's end is more severe than it would be if everything was wiped away in a, you know, whether it's a judge or a jury or whoever makes the decision says, yeah, sorry, not enough to prove guilt here. So the league would then, you know, not necessarily be pushed as hard to go in a severe direction. I think that's probably the
I think it is, but
bigger picture.
Excuse, damn.
That's okay.
We got to have some water. But I think what it also underscores, too, is Robert Kraft can't go to Goodell anymore and say, look, I'm going to make this go away. I'm going to tell him that I did it. And that's, but, you know, make sure you treat me okay. And believe that that would happen. Because Jerry Jones isn't going to be on his side when he gets 2 minutes after Robert's call and say, make sure you go easy on Robert. We're going to go easy on Robert because he's just going to make this whole circus end by taking the plea. So there's no merit in it. It gives absolute, complete control to the league, and it throws you at their mercy. And we've seen that there's very little mercy. And the story doesn't end there anyway, because the next story is, well, what's the punishment? Then is there a punishment appeal? Then how long does Robert stand out? Do they put the banner out? Do right. Al Michaels and Chris Collinsworth or Jim Nance and Tony Romo or Joe Buck and Troy Aikman, how much of their broadcast do they devote to discussing during the opener? I don't know who's got the opener for the Patriots. That's Sunday night, I'm guessing it'll be. If it's the Green Bay Packers and Bears. Anyway, lunch Thursday night. But it's just going to continue to linger and loom. Mm-hmm. So,
and it is, I think it's worth noting that Kraft is going to be at the owners' meetings one way or another. My understanding is he probably won't be speaking in any sort of formal capacity.
If it's adjudicated, my understanding is that he may speak.
Right.
But just a statement, not entertaining questions.
Right. But it doesn't look like we're going to be.
Pete.
Yeah.
And he can't help himself. Once he starts getting questions lobbed at his handsome white man,
then it's hard to run away, right?
He'll want to set the record straight on X, Y, and Z, and the next thing you know, he's got himself in a quagmire. But
and I can't imagine,
as I said to you, Phil, though,
yeah.
a couple weeks ago,
what's that?
You want to avoid people getting stuff wrong, or you want to avoid having anything in the coverage of your prostitution solicitation case be embarrassing for you? Don't go to the Workaday spa in the first place. I mean, you made your damn bed.
There is a way to avoid all of that.
You made your bed.
So we'll see. We'll see how it goes at the owners' meetings. I'm interested. You said it, and I'm with you. Other owners are going to be asked about this. Roger Goodell is going to be asked about this. And to me, it will be interesting to hear what they have to say, to read into what they have to say, because I imagine other owners around the league aren't going to be. Robert Kraft is on some important committees, and he's, you know, on different boards. He would be very involved, and I'm sure he still will be if he's going to be at this thing, but they can't be thrilled that he's going to be there.
I mean,
can they?
They're going to sit down with the network executives. They have a new CBA coming up. Robert was instrumental in the last one. Mm-hmm. Even at 77, despite the fact that people are questioning his decision-making, he's still, in my encounters with him, extremely sharp and able to more than hold his own. So the institutional knowledge he has will be important in the next CBA. He's important at the table with all these network executives who will be next week in Arizona. So, yeah, but you're going to sit there and he's going to start talking about whatever deal has to be done and go, this guy made a – just what is he thinking? So what was he saying again? but let's move away from the off-the-field stuff happily and talk about some of the pickups. Phil, we talked plenty of Michael Bennett last week during our Thursday pod. Let's move on from that. Let's talk about Mike Pennell.
Let's do that.
We have Mike Pennell on the docket. We have Bruce Ellington. We have Maurice Harris. We have – who's the safety?
I believe his name is Terrence Brooks.
Mm-hmm. T. Brooks.
T. Brooks.
And Ryan Allen re-sign.
We should get to know his name. Ryan Allen did re-sign for 1 year. where do you want to start?
Pennell.
Okay. So Mike Pennell is somebody that I had pegged as a potential Patriot at the day he was released by the Jets, and we knew he was going to become a free agent.
Why'd they release his ass?
So they didn't release him, sorry. I think all they did was they opted not to pick up an option. And part of that, my understanding, is Greg Williams is now the defensive coordinator in New York, different system than Todd Bowles. Greg Williams, very aggressive. You want to get up the field with all your guys up front. And Mike Pennell is 336 pounds. That's not his thing. His thing is to sit there and two-gap and eat up a bunch of space in the middle. And the Belichicks, the Patriots, still really like that kind of player.
Sedentary Mike Pennell.
Yeah, so they're okay with that. If you can be, you know, sedentary is strong. We should give him a little bit more credit. I mean, this guy was one of the best.
Conjure just a huge block
of run defenders.
Cement. Sitting there with a jersey on.
Like, I don't know if he'll be Alan Branch. He's not that long, but I think he is going to be more impactful against the run than Malcolm Brown. Malcolm Brown gave you a little, he was a pretty good athlete actually for 320, and in spurts was very good against the run. Mike Pennell, that is what he does. That is
and
all
he's
he does.
He's bigger than 320, correct?
He's bigger. He's almost 340.
So, would you re-sign Danny Shelton?
I might, and I only say that because I think they need another big body. So, to me, given the contract, Pennell's got a 2-year deal. It's about $5 million. He's guaranteed
very
a decent amount of it. Very reasonable, but still, no question, he's going to make the team, and he's going to have a chance to play quite a bit. And so, to me, he looks like that big-bodied starter on the interior, next to Lawrence Guy, Bennett on the edge, maybe Dietrich Wise on the opposite edge.
I
think you need
Adam
one
Butler.
More, though, because
yeah,
you need
to
rotate.
Inside,
you do have Adam
skinny.
Butler, but he's a 300-pound, third-down-only, really, type of player. I think you do need one more guy for that rotation. So whether you get him in the draft, Daylon Mack from Texas A&M is a 320-pound guy. Kalen Saunders, 320-pound guy from Western Illinois. You know, Dexter Lawrence is somebody I had mocked to the Patriots in the first round. I would be surprised now if they go first round at that position because they have Pennell, but you never know. I think they could use one more. So if Shelton's available on the cheap, why not?
I honestly don't care that much about Maurice Harris and Bruce Ellington. I mean, they're just,
I'm with you.
So they're just being thrown at the position. And Ryan Allen, it's interesting. You get the vibe that the Patriots like him. He's a terrific big game kicker. I mean, he kicks well in postseason games, big games. You don't see him doing what friggin' the weapon did in the Super Bowl. He sucked. Johnny Hecker was horrendous. Untold story of Super Bowl 59. What was it, 53?
53.
Yeah. Was Johnny Hecker just...
Yeah, the weapon.
Peeing down his leg all day.
He told me he wants to have the weapon tattooed on his belly. Like one of those that is a semicircle, goes over
he
your belly button.
Did do that?
Yeah. No, he wants to.
Oh.
He wants to. Because
like,
his mom
like
sent
Tupac's
him the...
Thug Life? But
yes.
Yeah.
But
that's
the weapon.
The reference.
Right.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Moving on from him...
Can I ask you first?
Sure.
Surprised that only 1-year deal for Ryan Allen? He's not
no,
an old
because
guy.
That's what I was trying to say. It seems as if they're trying to push away from the table a little bit on him. Corey Bajorque last summer.
Nice job with that.
Really was. The Patriots watched him kick for about 15 minutes at training camp and minicamp and said, you know what? Let's pretend that he's so bad we can't use him. And they tried to hide his ass. And Buffalo probably did what a lot of NFL teams do. Well, if it's open season, if you're not charging at your training camp, that means anybody can show up. So here comes a Buffalo Bills scout making that short ride over from Buffalo.
Mm-hmm.
And he's sitting there with a hat on. He's like, wow, this kid is murdering the ball. Let's sign him if he comes available.
That's interesting. That would be more diligence than I would have assumed that the Bills even did. Because if you're an AFC East team, if you're any team, and you see the Patriots roster, and this guy's on the roster, and he's healthy, but he hasn't kicked in any of the preseason games, wouldn't you kind of scratch your head and say, they might be just trying to hide this guy. He might be so good that, sight unseen, we should maybe just sign him. Because
Maybe, but I do know
only
that...
Only 1 of 53,
but
that's interesting.
Come training camps, these teams will fly guys all over the joint.
And why not? Like you said, it's free to get in.
Once you charge, something happens.
You probably have to identify yourself,
yes.
Right? Is that what it is?
I think you're supposed to identify yourself if they don't charge. I don't know. It's some bullshit.
Interesting.
You're not supposed to be going to each other's training camps. I would have to look at that. I just know that I talked to a personnel man back a long time ago who's much higher up now who used to kind of go with the glasses and mustache move to watch other teams' practices.
That's great. Could you imagine?
So I don't give a shit about any of those signings.
What I do want to get into...
is a story I wrote the other day about trades.
Yes.
Because the Patriots have... how much time we got, Crush?
11 minutes.
Left?
Yeah.
All right. We got TV to do in a few minutes, too.
Glad your microphone works, Crush.
Thanks, guys.
So, Patriots, look, we're not going to have a situation where they're going to draft a D difference-making wide receiver who's going to come in as a rookie, and Brady's going to go, wow, this guy's just like Deion Branch, and just have a day.
Probably not.
Okay. So that being the case, my feeling is they have imported wide receivers time and time and time again. They got really lucky with Brandon Cooks. They were able to get him on a lease deal. They ran him around for a year. And then when he got expensive, he was going to cost $8 million, they found a taker to take him off their hands for basically the same cost. Now, they probably won't be able to repeat that. But I do like the idea of finding a trade target who might be diminished in some way. He's a fourth-year player with a fifth-year option that has to be picked up or something like that. Or he's a player who is entering the final year of his rookie contract. And you try and pick him up now. Also, there's a chance that these same guys will be available around Halloween when the trade deadline comes. But for conversation's sake now, because the Patriots cannot go into an NFL season with Bruce Ellington, Maurice Harris, Julian Edelman, and Philip Dorsett, rookies.
Braxton Berrios.
Braxton Berrios, okay? And Riley McCarron.
I'm just like you people are.
I see a guy who looks kind of quick and makes some catches, and he might be a little wiry, and he might be a little bit on the fair side, skin tone-wise, and I say, wow, he might be just like X. When I got a look at Braxton Berrios and Riley McCarron, I said, they're not like those guys. Neither is Adam Humphries. God damn, I watched that guy last week. Finally said, who is this prick that they were going to give $9 million to?
See, I think that's a little strong. Phil, He's nothing like
Amendola or Edelman.
I think he moves a little like Amendola. And he's more durable. I know. You're going to punch me.
I think he's bigger than Amendola, yeah. But he's not nearly as elusive.
He's slippery.
He is not slippery.
I like his slipperiness. Yes,
okay, the clips that I watched. I mean, again, it's not like I'm sitting there chewing tape. Is that what they call it?
I don't know. Does somebody call it that? That would be great.
Yeah, one of those idiots.
Is that because you used to feed it into the machine through your mouth? Like that was a way of like separating it maybe?
I don't know.
Like an extra set of hands?
Be that as it may. I got nine possibilities that I put up.
Yes.
It was a gallery.
This was very good.
It was a lot of fun to do, actually, because it helps you be smarter individually. I got Nelson Agholor, Sterling Shepard, A.J. Green, Austin Carr, former Patriot, Laquan Treadwell, Josh Doctson, and a couple other guys. Jarius Wright.
Mm-hmm.
Tyler Boyd.
Yes.
I looked at Taj Boyd first. I'm like, Taj Boyd, he's a quarterback.
Maybe they convert him.
Do you like the idea?
Yes. So I like the idea of a trade. I think your odds on getting an immediate contributor are much better that way. I think the draft has a lot of intriguing guys. I don't think the Patriots will take a player in the first round. They've never taken a receiver. I don't think they'll take a receiver in the first round. They've never done that with Bill Belichick. They have a couple second round picks, and there'll be some guys there available to them. I don't know if any of them are dependable immediate contributors. You might end up with a player like Malcolm Mitchell, who by the end of his rookie season ended up being a dependable guy and a legitimate option. I just don't know if that's going to happen right off the bat with any of these players, so that's why I like the trade. And there are a few of those names that you mentioned that I really like, but it all depends on what kind of receiver they want. And the Patriots could want multiple types of receivers.
Give you for instance, if you take a chance on Sterling Shepard, and they agree, okay, this guy's going into his last year, and we're a rebuild, and the Patriots are offering us a second and a fifth, whatever, for a rental.
He's in the last year of his deal?
For a rental, yeah.
And he does not have an option, correct? He was a second round pick, I believe. So no option. So
Giants would get back. You know, really, probably own the second. You can only give him back what they would have
got. Give him a second. And then you end up with a third if you let him go via free agency after the season. So you're basically trading down from the second into the third with a year difference for 1 year of Sterling Shepard.
I would be totally fine with that.
Totally fine with it. He is a slot receiver, so he's that really critical position on the inside. He frees up Julian Edelman from having to play in there and take that beating on a snap-to-snap basis. You still use him in there occasionally, but I like it a lot. You loved Sterling Shepard coming out of college. To me, he would be one of the best slots in the league if he wasn't playing with such a low-level quarterback. Mm-hmm. And I don't think there's really much downside at all if the Giants would be interested in that type of thing, but they seem to be in this weird limbo. Are we competing? Are we not? What are we doing here? Yeah, so But I think they might be open to it because it does feel like they are leaning more towards rebuilding. I mean, by trading Odell and doing what they traded Olivier Vernon, they're kind of freeing up money. It looks like they're getting ready for their next quarterback. They've kind of built up that offensive mm-hmm. line there. So that would be an interesting one. That's the one I like the most.
I like it the most, too. And I think the Giants probably like him that much as well to say, why would we get rid of a guy who seems to do everything the way we want it done? And he's valuable here. So some of the other guys, too, Laquon Treadwell, that's a guy who just is a sick athlete, but he's blocked out by Diggs and Thielen, and he hasn't realized any of the benefits. Josh Doctson has had some amazing games for Washington. He's made some amazing catches, but again, you're playing with an ass team and an ass coaching staff.
He would be someone, and that was a great line in your piece, where you give pros and cons for every guy, and the con for Josh Doctson could be Aaron Dobson or Brian Timms.
Yes.
And that's exactly who he could be. And he reminds me a lot of Dobson. I think he's had a little bit of an issue with staying on the field, but that's kind of who he is as a player. He's tall, he's skinny, but he's acrobatic, and he can run really fast in a straight line. That's what he was in college. But that's another guy who's taken in the first round, right? So he's got a year and then the option,
May
I believe.
May 2nd is when the option comes due.
And you would never pick up the option on him.
Because that would make rocket it up to like an $8.5 million, $9 million contract for 2020.
But maybe he comes here for a year and his value goes through the roof because he catches a bunch of back shoulder throws from Tom Brady and he ends up with 750 yards. And then you can flip him. You can turn him around and trade him the same way you did with Cooks.
But you can't trade him because he's expiring? No, you can't.
Well, what do they do with Cooks? They pick up the option and then trade him?
No.
And then they tore up his deal?
Cooks was not as far along. Cooks was not as far along.
Oh, so he had a year and his option left after 2017.
Am I wrong on Doctson? He's got a May 2nd. Yeah, the Redskins on Doctson, who was a 2016 draft pick. So he's played 16, 17, 18. He's entering his fourth season. The league year has started, and on May 2nd, they have to decide whether or not they're going to pick up their option for the fifth year.
Ah.
So same thing when they traded for Cooks. When the Patriots traded for Cooks, they did pick up the option.
Got it.
The Patriots picked up the option when it came. Which
time
basically ensured that the $8 million and the Patriots said,
we can't do that.
If we can find somebody to get out of it.
Yeah.
And then we can just let Tom and Josh worry about it. We'll just trade Brandon.
Yeah.
And then we have Julian and, and Gronk.
Maybe.
Maybe we should get a running game. Yeah, let's do that. I mean, it's amazing.
Doesn't that rule it out? Doesn't that rule out Doctson then?
But then we got Jordan Matthews and Kenny Britt, don't we? Yeah, we got those guys. And if worse comes to worse, we can get Decker. Good point. What about Josh Gordon? If he goes south? Yeah, we can get him too. Just look at what they did last year. Look at what they did.
Yeah. But that, I think, would rule out Doctson then. Because there's no way you would pick up his option. Cooks, when he came here, had multiple thousand-yard receiving seasons under his belt.
Yeah, he was a very
So he said, okay, we'll pick it up and, maybe we'll want to deal him by the time next season rolls around, but if we have to keep him, he's actually still a pretty good deal. $8 million was not much.
When you pick up the option, I wonder if the guy is cuttable or if it's guaranteed, almost like a franchise tag. Shit, I wish I knew that. That's something I knew somebody who covered the NFL who would be able to have that kind of an answer.
You got two of those guys in here, and neither of us have the
answer. No, think about that. Like, so May 2nd, if you say, we're going to pick up Josh's option, does that become guaranteed? Or can you cut his ass
the following February? I bet it does.
Huh.
To Doctson's credit, all of the Redskins receivers were so inconsistent the past 2 years that, Crowder just got paid, and he would have bum games, great games, so the track record there is kind of tough to...
Right. He could be special with a good quarterback. You don't know.
Yeah. Crusher checking in because big time Doctson guy. All right. Well, that's
a
clean place to break. We're going to say goodbye to Phil, and I'm going to read a few questions that you guys sent in to Quick Slants on Twitter. Again, Phil, where could they listen to your podcast? Do you still do that, or you don't have to do it anymore? No, it's off season. You can just feed up. Fingers interlaced behind your head.
I don't appreciate that.
Sunglasses down, just a stogie pipe knocked out of the side of your mouth.
How do we shut his mic off? How do we do that? The Next Pats podcast, phenomenal podcast, getting tremendous reviews, big time reviews, almost Quick Slants-esque reviews for the Next Pats podcast. We will have another edition coming out on Thursday.
Thursday.
We're going to have Dane Brugler, draft expert for The Athletic.
Brugs.
Phenomenal, phenomenal analyst when it comes to the draft. We're going to have him on. We're going to talk about my first-round mock. We're going to talk about another seven-team-specific Patriots mock. We're going to talk about all sorts of stuff. I'm going to the BC Pro Day, so go find that next Pats podcast.
All right, Phil. Thanks
Thursday,
for stopping.
Midday. What? Download it for your ride home.
Boom.
All right, Phil. Thanks a lot for stopping by. Right after this exhale and inhale, going to get to some of your viewer questions and comments, or listener questions and comments. When you got an inquiry, you send it in to me. It's viewer interaction time. Hey, how you doing? Tom Curran, Quick Slants, the podcast. That came off the top of my head. That did. Popped out. I'm going to go through some of the Twitter questions that we had posed this week when I sent out the word that I had a podcast coming up and Quick Slants had returned to the airwaves. As you saw, Troy Brown was my co-host this week, talked a lot of wide receiver talk. But my guy Sean Conroy asks, regarding Robert Kraft, what do you suppose RKK's PR move will be once this gets resolved? Sincere expression of contrition? Donation to anti-trafficking causes? Or something more defiant? Also interested to see the players' reaction. Working our way backwards there, Sean, I think the Patriots players will look at this as a terrific opportunity to say nothing at all. They really are not going to feel as if they want to be weighing in on the owner's moral turpitude or making value judgments about the missteps of a 77-year-old individual. I think that they can certainly say, appreciate all that Robert has done for us, and I certainly don't come down on the side of the objectification or using women for commerce, but I'm really not that inclined to speak on this because I'm not well-versed. That's probably what I'd say if I was playing for the team. I don't play for the team, so I say it was stupid, and defiant is probably not the way to go because, again, the only reason there is a bed and you have to sleep in it is because you made it. I'm going to close it with this. In writing that gallery/slideshow, and I'm sorry to subject you guys to that because people are like, oh, friggin' slideshow, I hate slideshows. But you know what? I kind of like slideshows because they're easy to do and they have a big, pretty picture on them and they're easy to digest. So in doing that gallery, I mentioned that AJ Green is expensive. I also said that other than height, there's not one thing that AJ Green does better than Julian Edelman. Now, of course, people push back significantly on that, pointing out a number of statistical factors and Pro Bowl honors that AJ Green had enjoyed since his career. There were some who labored to explain to me that I must have eaten paint chips or grown up under power lines. Well, that was disappointing to me, and I didn't. However, what I want to express about AJ Green is he's nice. He's an outside receiver. The gold standard for outside receivers right now is Julio Jones. Then you got DeAndre Hopkins, and A.J. Green fits in there. Those guys, when they come inside the hash marks and work inside, well, they're long striding guys. So they're not going to be as quick and able to change direction like an Edelman. So they're not going to be your classic third down target where you can hit them for high percentage throws down the middle of the field and pick up your 8 yards and they lay down like a newborn foal in the pasture. Okay? They don't do that. They run outside shit that you have to hit them on the outside with. They're not going to do the business on the inside. Now, why did they make Pro Bowls? Why did they catch the ball so much? Why did they compile so many yards? Why do head coaches look for them? Why do offensive coordinators look for them? Why do owners pay them $15 million? Because people are under the impression that that's the way you win football games, which is fine. Talent is great. But give me an Antonio Brown. Give me a Larry Fitzgerald. Give me a Julian Edelman. Give me a T.Y. Hilton even. Give me a Julio Jones at the top of his class. Give me an Odell Beckham. Give me all those guys and probably a few more before you give me Jarvis Landry and as well. Give me all of them before you give me AJ Green. I hate to say it. I mean, Crusher, you're still here with me. Remember when Ocho came here? I mean, it's a 1,500-yard receiver.
Didn't work out.
He had 90 catches sometimes.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not saying AJ Green is the same as Ocho, but it's a different, it's a...
kind of cut from the same cloth.
Chuck it up offense.
Randy worked here, but that's
and when he
it.
Didn't, again, what happened in 2010 when he left?
Yeah.
Three games, they say goodbye, they bring back Deion Branch, and Deion Branch plays as well as Randy Moss had played in two seasons.
Doesn't fit in well here.
So
I agree.
It's a different way of looking at it. People can't get their minds around it. They're personally offended by the allegation that Julian Edelman might be a more valuable player than A.J. Green. And I understand that it's going to be an inflammatory comment because it goes against conventional wisdom.
Yeah. A lot of fantasy talk in there, too, because A.J. always puts up points. So that's another big reason.
So my guy Kevin Joseph said, I agree that A.J. Green is just a name at this point. I think Laquan Treadwell is the perfect option. He was a beast. And maybe Bill can make it work. He's a bust so far. Out of everyone listed, I think he and that guy from Carolina, that's Jarius Wright, were the best value and system fit options. My guy Austin says, just a name, crying face emoji. A.J. Green right now would be the best receiver Patriots would have since Randy. Lol. I don't know what lol means.
It's laugh out loud.
Oh. Kevin then says, can you actually tell me why? Don't show me stats from 2 or 3 years ago. Please tell me the physical traits about A.J. Green now that make him worth his name value and better than Edelman. Austin says, he can work outside or in. He's a red zone machine. He can still take 90% of the guys deep on any given play. His catch radius is 2 times Edelman's. Oh, and he doesn't need PEDs to do it. Did he mean PEDs?
No, like PEDs, I think.
Edel can do out and in and deep, says Kevin. I'll give you red zone and high point, though. Not sure if it's worth his name value. And then Kevin just starts covering for him. So the PED thing was an accident, which Edelman has talked about. If you remember, it's an unknown reading. He copped to it. He did it. You think Edelman is a better boundary receiver than AJ? Okay, boundary receiver means, this is Austin, a guy who lines up near the boundary. If he thinks boundary receiver means makes catches on the sideline, yeah, I would say Edelman is certainly, in terms of, like A.J. Green, a different kind of boundary receiver. He's not going to jump up over a corner on, like, a little skinny fade. And he's probably, but he'd certainly be his equal on a comeback, 1,000%, and better. It's just the way they're built.
Yeah.
One guy's got short little body. The other guy's got long body. A.J. Green's going to be better deep down the field. Those are lower percentage passes than short ones. What the frig are we talking about year in, year out? All right, I'm going to shut it down. We had a great pod here. Really enjoyed being back. Quick Slants is back. We're going to be at the owners' meetings next week. Phil and I will pod again. The pod rides again! Make sure you review and subscribe. Love you.